setting my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect. Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 341. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and today I'm joined by students from Campus Regina Public's Social Justice Program, Jodeci, Justin, Kale, and Matthew. They're going to interview their special guest, Stacy, and I'll let them introduce her more fully. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Jim. As you mentioned, we are a group of students from Campus Regina Public Social Justice Program. This program offers hands-on learning where students from various high schools across the city to come together to focus on subjects under the basis of a career path. As part of the social justice program, we are given the opportunity from our instructors, Harvey Bassey and Scott Gardner, to look at the injustices in our society.
Our classes spend a majority of our time looking at local and global issues that are negatively impacting our society. One of the aspects that we have been using on greatly in the past few weeks is labor rights and laws.
One of the documents that we are looking at in class is called Rights and Responsibility, a Guide to Labor Standards in Saskatchewan. This document has given our class some insight and knowledge into the basic laws, rights, facts about the workforce in our province.
One of the reasons we are all interested in the labor rights is because most of us, as grade 11 and 12 students, have part-time employment. A lot of the students in our class work in service-related jobs where they are in constant interaction with the public.
Before we begin our show, we'd like to introduce our panel of speakers. My name is Jodeci. I'm 16 years old. I spend a lot of my spare time reading and doing research regarding mental health and literature. I enjoy helping my grandmother and family around the house. I'd like to learn more about labor rights because I remember my first job and lack of knowledge I had towards what I could and could not do. I was too nervous to ask my manager, and I never knew there was a place that specialized in the rights and regulations to working. I'd like to help people become aware of this Become aware of the basis within working.
My name is Justin Behrens. I'm 18 years old. I currently go to Cochrane High School. I love playing basketball and hanging out with friends. I've worked at Keltire and Leon's Furniture. I have two sisters and three brothers and one niece. I am interested in labor rights because I like knowing whether an employer is being untruthful about the laws and applying a given situation.
My name is Kale Nash. I'm 17 years old. I attend Cochrane High School. I have two siblings, one sister, one brother. I live with my mom. I love playing hockey. Also, I love farming for as long as I can remember. Part of the reason I'm interested in labor's rights is because the past I had a boss take advantage of my lack of knowledge in the area. Now that I know more, I feel more stronger in my workplace.
My name is Matt Gillet, and I'm 17 years old. Since I'm graduating high school in only 7 months, I think it's good to learn and talk about workers' rights, as that'll all be things that affect me in a major way as I prepare to enter the workforce. I've had some small part-time jobs in the past, and even then I wasn't sure about my rights, so I think it's important for the youth of today to be knowledgeable.
As young adults entering the workforce, labor laws have already become a huge deal. Young workers get taken advantage of a lot due to lack of experience and awareness. It's important to be aware of what is okay and what is not okay within the workforce to ensure that everyone has the most beneficial outcome.
Without labor laws, it would be impossible for anybody to be treated fairly in their jobs, because if we didn't, people would be working without very much pay. We would not be getting proper breaks or leaves. Staff would be overworked and underpaid.
If laws weren't put into place, we would be without CPP and disability. We would be without things that make life enjoyable.
With all these things in mind, who would want to work under unsafe and unstable conditions? Labor laws not only protect workers and their rights, but they make it so people are willing to work and get things done.
This song is Working Man by Bon Jovi. We chose this song because we feel it really speaks out to everyone who knows what it's like to work too.
Yeah.
Now I'd like to introduce our special guest, Stacy Durning from the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor.
Thanks. Hi, guys.
Hi, Stacy. So if you could begin by telling us a bit about the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor and what it is that you guys do over there.
Sure. I've worked at the Federation of Labor since 2003. I started there as a summer student, and then I worked there as the Ready for Work coordinator since 2007. And so what the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor is, it's an umbrella organization for all of the unions in the province. It represents about 100,000 union members in Saskatchewan, and they come from 37 different unions. Basically, what we try to do is strive for improving people's lives in their workplaces, and this is for all workers in Saskatchewan, whether unionized or not, and we kind of act as the voice of working people. We support principles of social unionism and struggle for social and economic justice for everybody in the province.
All right, what's your role in the the SFL?
I work as the Ready for Work coordinator, and what that is a program that works in conjunction with the Workers' Compensation Board, and we deliver Ready for Work presentations in high schools and in other organizations across the province, mainly dealing with occupational health and safety education and directed towards young workers and to new workers, and just to make sure that everybody knows what their safety rights are when they enter the workforce for the first time.
I was curious as to what the CFL, I don't think you're in the football league, as to what the SFL has planned or has in line for probation periods. So, you know, when you get first hired to a job, you, for Staples, for example, has a 3-month probation period where they can pretty much fire you for no reason whatsoever. Is there any laws in place for, like, maximum probation periods?
So where I work at the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor, we don't actually work on any of the laws or legislations around working workers' rights, but we do try to fight to improve the rights, and then we also make sure that people are aware of them. So from what I know, I'm not an expert on any kind of legislation or any labor rights, but from what I know is probationary periods standard is about 3 months, what it has in the Labor Standards Act, but it can vary from workplace to workplace, and it can vary if you're in a union workplace or in a non-union workplace, and it just, there's not much that you can go on that it's just standard, but 3 months is very typical for a probation period for new workers.
So it varies between different companies and stuff.
Yes, it does.
All right.
So since you were just mentioning about unions, what are the largest unions in Saskatchewan and Canada?
Well, the largest union in Saskatchewan for sure is the Canadian Union of Public Employees, also known as CUPE. And in Saskatchewan, they represent close to 30,000 members. And that is also the largest union in the country. And they have about 650,000 members. There's also lots of big unions in Saskatchewan and in Canada. Other large unions in Saskatchewan would be the union that represents government employees, which is the Saskatchewan Government and General Employees Union, also known as SGEU, or UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers Union. There's Retail and Wholesale Department Store Union. So there's a whole bunch of different unions, and the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor represents 37 of them in Saskatchewan, and some of them are really large and some of them are quite small. In Canada, there's also public sector, private sector unions like Public Service Lines of Canada. They have close to 200,000 members, so there's lots. Too many to name.
Okay, so does the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor do anything special regarding the rights of youth workers, or are they all pretty much the same across the board?
Well, rights of workers are basically standard across the board, but I know the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor puts a big emphasis on trying to support new and young workers because it is understood that young workers are the most vulnerable workers in society. And just for a lot of the reasons that you named earlier, that you enter the workforce for the first time and you're not sure if your manager knows what they're saying is right, or you're not sure if what they're telling you is wrong and you don't know where to go to for help. So the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor, we actually have a young workers committee. So that's for union members that are affiliated to the SFL. They can sit on this committee if you're under the age of 30. And this committee then kind of works as much as they can to help promote workers' rights for young workers, and then to kind of develop plans on how we can reach out to our young workers and make sure they know what's going on. We also, well, so my job is specifically working with young workers to talk about occupational health and safety when they go to work, because I think that is one of the most important issues. And I know that students, for sure, we get lots of questions around, what am I supposed to be getting paid? When can I take my breaks? When are my holidays? But I know with my position, a big focus is around safety, because a lot of young workers are getting injured on the jobs, and nobody can deny that it's the highest rate of injury is for young workers. So that's kind of where we reach out with our Ready for Work program. And then we also run a camp in the summer called the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor Summer Camp, and that is for teens aged 13 to 16 to attend. It's 1 week in August, and it's sort of similar to what you're doing with your human rights studies at schools, but we spend 1 week talking about these issues with teenagers, and then the rest of the time is also working on summer camp. So I think the Saskatchewan Federation of Labor tries to reach out to young workers often and in different venues.
All right, so what is minimum wage?
Right now, minimum wage is $10 an hour, and that was from, I guess, December of last year, of 2012, is when that started.
All right, well, are there any plans in the future of increasing it?
So that is kind of done through legislation. So from what I know is that there's a minimum wage board, and they're mandated by the Labor Standards Act to review and to make recommendations to the government to change or to increase the minimum wage. And so their last review was done in 2011, and they, since then, it had been raised to $10. And they are also suggesting to tie the minimum wage to the consumer price index. And so anytime that goes up, so like with inflation, when inflation increases, then minimum wage would also increase. So that's a recommendation. It's not put into law yet, but that's kind of where they're heading.
So if minimum wage goes up, do other employees' wages go up too, or?
So you hope so. You hope that it would happen that way. There's no law saying that this would have to happen. So if minimum wage goes up, minimum wage, obviously, those earners, their money would go up. And if anybody's below the minimum wage, it would have to get bumped up to at least minimum wage. There's no law saying that you have to go above that. You see a trend, though, when minimum wage does go up, that other wages increase, because you kind of want to keep that gap between so people have something to work towards to make different raises or whatever. So you do see that happen in general, is that all wages will go up when a minimum wage goes up.
Can an employer reduce an employee's pay?
Yes, technically they can, as long as it's above minimum wage. And this is particularly something that could happen in a non-union workplace. I don't think that you see that very often, but it can be done. There's no law saying that you can't lower somebody's rate of pay as long as it meets the minimum standard of $10 an hour. And if you're unionized, you would have a contract that you wouldn't be able to do that. You would have to stay at that same pay band and then go up from there.
What would cause an employer to maybe decrease an employee's pay?
I can't think of anything, because where we come from, right, we're trying to advocate for workers' rights, so I'm not sure what the reasons would be, and I would try to argue against those, but I'm sure employers, if they do that, they would have a reason that they would need to explain.
What are the rights for people with learning disabilities?
I would say that their rights are the same as for other workers. It's actually, I would think that the onus is actually higher to have those rights protected for people with disabilities. There's actually something in the Human Rights Code that talks about duty to accommodate. And the duty to accommodate would mean that you have to accommodate somebody. Legally, you have to accommodate somebody if they have a disability, and that would include learning disabilities. So if it is known by the employer that there is a disability that they're dealing with, the onus is actually higher for them to make sure that their rights are protected, and that they're protected at work, and that they're not subject to, I guess, discipline or discharge because of that.
So what happens if an employer doesn't follow the law?
So there's lots of different venues for that. So the different laws I think that we're sort of talking about here is labor standards, which legislates kind of the minimum standard for people that go into work, occupational health and safety around your safety in the workplace. That we just talked about the Human Rights Code, and that's where your duty to accommodate is. So you have, if you feel that you're that your rights are being violated, you could go to the government, and they have the Ministry for Labor Rights and Workplace Safety. It's kind of where you'd go through there, and they have officers that work in there that would be able to direct you to the right place. But for the most part, you kind of have to go back to the government and make your appeals that way. If you are in a union environment, the union would definitely be able to help you, and that's where you would go.
Okay, kind of going off on a tangent here. How does, like, parental leave work?
How does parental leave work? So that's kind of in line with maternity and parental leave if you're going to have a baby or go off for mm-hmm. that. So in Canada, what happens is that you actually get 15 weeks of maternity leave, and then after that, it's 35 weeks of parental leave. And it's a little bit complicated. I am recently back from maternity leave, so it's sort of fresh in my memory, but it's something that in each case, you kind of have to research and make sure that you're doing it properly. There's lots of criteria that you need to reach in order to be eligible for parental and maternity leave. Some of it, so it's kind of like EI. So you're going off of work, so you have to apply for it through EI, and it's for people that are pregnant, that have recently given birth, or that are adopting a child, or caring for a newborn at home, and the different requirements that you have to be able to, you have paid your EI premiums, you either have to be the biological mother, or biological father, or adoptive parents of the baby, and you have to reach other criteria, like your weekly earnings are reduced more than 40%, and then you'll be eligible for it. And then you have to have a certain number of hours worked in the year prior to applying for it. But basically, if you're eligible for maternity leave, then you would be able to get 15 weeks of maternity leave, and then after that, 35 weeks of parental leave. And the parental leave can be taken by either the mother or the father. It doesn't have to be... You can kind of share that one, but the maternity leave is definitely for the mother.
All right. When is overtime to be paid, and what is the overtime rate?
So right now, overtime is to be paid after 8 hours a day. So if you've worked more than 8 hours in one day or 44 hours in 1 week, and the overtime rate is 1.5 times what your regular wage is. Right now, there's a Saskatchewan Employment Act that they're trying to, well, that is in place, but it's just not quite set as law yet. And things are going to be changing around labor rights in there because they're taking the acts that currently exist and putting it into one act and changing some of it. So.
All right, so when do you think that will actually change?
Well, I don't know a whole lot around what happens with the legislation, but it's passed already, and we're just waiting, I think, for the regulations to be finalized with government. So the next time that they're sitting in session, I'm pretty sure that that's when it'll be passed, but we're kind of waiting.
I was curious as to, lots of times students working ask for, you know, during the summertime, they usually ask for their hours to be increased. And during when school starts again, they tend to ask for their hours to be decreased again, you know, so they can, you know, do their homework and whatever students do in their daily life. I've seen situations where the employer not necessarily refused to do so, but, like, continued scheduling them for, like, the same amount of hours. So what kind of steps would a student, whether it would be a post-secondary or a high school student, what steps would they be able to take to do something about the fact that their employer is not respecting their request to have their hours reduced for school purposes?
Right. So there are different laws around students and work. And it changes a little bit. So if you're over the age of 16, you're eligible to work anywhere, and I guess it's up to the employer to schedule you, and hopefully they respect your requests and that they understand the importance of being in school and trying to be in school and also hold down a job. So there's not much that you can do because they're able to schedule you, and you're hoping that it's going to fit in with your schedule, and you can request, and I'm hoping that, I guess, the employer is going to follow that. If you're under the age of 16 and you're actually 14 or 15 years old, you can only work under certain conditions, and this is fairly new. And you have to have the permission from your parent or guardian, and you have also had to have completed the Young Workers Readiness Certificate course. And then you also cannot work more than 16 hours a week while you're in school, and you can't work after 10 p.m. if you have school the next day, and there's different criteria like that. So if you're 14 or 15 years old, there are stricter set times when you can work. If you're over the age of 16, I think it's an arrangement that you have to make with your employer, and hopefully you can make that work.
So there's no basic laws setting that an employer, like, legally must respect your request for time off.
Unfortunately, there's not.
And on that note, I think we're going to bring the first half to an end. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll come right back to finish off that conversation, and we've got some music to come as well. So let's go to the break, and we'll be right back. And we're back.
Okay, so we're just talking about working and decreasing hours and things. And so it's the responsibility of, like, the worker to know their rights, I assume. Like, their employer isn't responsible for telling them what their rights are, or...
Well, it's kind of a responsibility of both the employer and the employee. Obviously, the employer needs to know what all of the legislation and all of the laws are for their workers, but... It's also up to the, it's a responsibility of the worker to kind of know what to expect. Hopefully you're working in a workplace that the employer understands what the laws are and respects that, so you don't have those struggles and you can trust what they're saying is true. That doesn't always happen, and that's why it is important for you to kind of know what your rights are and then where to go if your rights are being violated.
If an employee gets tips, are they required to give some to their managers or supervisors?
You may be surprised to hear, but no. Tips are for the person that's made the tips. And this is something that comes up a lot, especially with young workers in the service industry. There's lots of myths around having to tip out, having to put tips into a pool to make sure that you're covering the cooks and the other co-workers that aren't receiving tips. Tips are for the person that received them. And I know that it's something that is a big struggle for young workers in the restaurant industry. And unions, unfortunately, aren't involved in the restaurant industry that much. So it's hard for us, I guess, at the Federation of Labor to enforce that. But it's something that we always try to make people aware of. And it's something that if it is a big problem in the place that you're working, to bring it to the attention of the ministry to see if maybe they can do some sort of investigation. Because it is actually against the law for you to have to tip out and to pay your tips to other people in your workplace.
All right, so how often are rights looked at and reviewed?
It's up to the government that's in sitting. So the laws are in place, and if they choose to open them up and look at them again, they do that. It's kind of, they can get a bit of pressure, I guess, from the public saying that they need to look at laws, but it's up to the government to decide when they do that.
So how are union fees calculated?
How are union fees calculated? So that's on a different, each union. So I told you there's 37 different unions that are attached to the SFL, and each of them will do it differently. For the most part, well, they're all very transparent. It happens at their meetings, their annual gatherings, and it's based on a percentage of what people make for the most part. Some of them might have flat rates, but for the most part, it's based on a percentage of what somebody makes, and they vote on that at their meetings, that maybe 1% or 1.5% of their wage will go towards union dues. But it's very democratic, and it's done at their meetings with everybody there.
Why are union fees in place?
Why are union fees in place? That's to cover costs of the union running. So it costs money to run a union because they employ staff and they use resources to help workers. So, and then the Federation of Labor, the unions are affiliated to us. So some of the union dues also go to pay different affiliation fees so you can be attached to other organizations. So in a typical union, what the money is used for is staff. So then you have union representation, union lawyers that are working on your cases when they need to be going to arbitration. Research. So lots of unions do a lot of research around different issues affecting workers, so then we can kind of go to the government with our appeals for why we think things should change, right? So we have the research to back that up. There's also education that's put in there. So unions are big proponents of educating workers so then they can know their rights, so we spend money on that. So each union is set up differently, but I think that for the most part, that's what the money is spent on, is staff, resources, education.
That makes sense.
Another question for you. I've been hearing a lot of bad things about the union. Can you tell us some good things?
Sure, where do I begin? No, this is common, especially talking with high school students, and you don't learn a lot about unions in school. You learn a lot about business, you learn a lot about how to do that kind of aspect and how to work, but you don't hear a lot about unions. So what you hear is either from the media, maybe from home, or from friends that have had bad experiences, right? So for the most part, what unions do, the biggest thing is protection. Right, so they protect workers, they protect you for your job, so job security, they make sure that you can't just be fired for no reason. They make sure they fight to make sure that your rights are enforced. If you don't have a union and you know that your rights are being violated, it's a very hard path to kind of figure out where to go to get the answers or to get it resolved. If you have a union, that's the one direct kind of path. I go to the union and the union should be able to help me. So that's easier for a lot of workers. They don't have to know which ministry to contact and then get to the right person in there, and there's all these different people that you need to contact. So that's a big thing of it. They fight for wages, so then we talked about minimum wage earlier. Minimum wage is still a really tough wage to live on if that was going to be your full-time job. So having a union job, you're pretty much guaranteed to have a wage that's higher than minimum wage, and so that's going to help you that way. There's also language in your collective agreement that always deals with safety and harassment and bullying in the workplace and just kind of things around that. And then you get additional leaves, and then you also get to be part of kind of a bigger organization, a community of workers that are actually concerned about the workers and their lives as opposed to just the bottom dollar and trying to, you know, get to your deadline at work. So that's kind of a few things just off the top of my head.
So since we're still talking about the unions, how are they protecting us, though, as youth, if we do get into union jobs?
If you get a union job?
Yeah.
How do they protect you? Well, you're automatically protected by the collective agreement. So each union has a collective agreement with their workplace, and anybody who's employed at that workplace is protected by that collective agreement. It doesn't matter if you're brand new or if you've been there for 25 years. You're protected by that collective agreement, and I think that's different than if you're going to a workplace that doesn't have a union, and a lot of the newer workers are treated differently, right? Because they haven't put their time in and they're kind of disposable, right? Oh, if you don't work out, we'll just get rid of you and get somebody else in new. If you're hired into a union shop, that's not going to happen because you're protected by the union and you have people looking out for you that way. Some collective agreements may actually have good special clauses for young workers, and unions have lots of opportunities for young workers to get the education and the safety training that they need to make sure that they're at a safe job and that they know what their rights are. So that's something that unions definitely offer for young workers.
How do you know that you're in a job that is of a union? Like, I'm pretty sure, like, I know Walmart is and other stores that are, well, I was told that Walmart's in the union.
Walmart is definitely not unionized.
Really?
They're one of the employers that tries to fight unions from being there, but that's okay if you think that, because that's stuff that you're hearing out there, and that's legitimate, right? You may hear things that this is a good employer, that's a unionized place, and that's fair game. So just so we are clear, Walmart is definitely not union. There have been efforts to try to unionize Walmart, and there actually have been successful stores that were unionized, but then Walmart turns around and either closes shop or uses their fleet of lawyers to try to get rid of the union. So they are what's known as union busters, and there are businesses that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
They try to bust unions that are coming in there, and the unions are also trying to unionize their workers and protect those
for
employees.
A brief time, Weyburn Walmart had a union, but it got voted out.
What's funny is I have a friend who works at Walmart and told me that Walmart's a union.
Right. So back to your original question about how do you know if a workplace is unionized, you should be handed a collective agreement if you work at a workplace that is unionized. You should have to sign a union card, and you should have time that you actually meet with the union to have an orientation. Most collective agreements have language around new employees, new hires, that they have a certain allotted time with the union to, you know, go over the collective agreement, to answer any questions, to figure out who their shop steward is, who to go to if they have questions. That doesn't always happen, and especially in workplaces that you see a high turnover of people, because they don't want to, they don't invest the time, right, to get you right away, because you may be gone within a couple months. So you have to ask around, and hopefully you're aware. And if you're not aware that there was a union, bring that to the union's attention and say, you know, I worked here for 6 months. I didn't even know that we had a union. And that should be something the union's addressing, either to get stronger language in the collective agreement that they have time with new hires to talk about the union, or else maybe they're just not, they have the language there, but they're not following through with their kind of portion of that, and they're not reaching out as much as they should be. So it's good for the union to know if there's problems. So if you find that is an issue and you didn't know you had that you were protected by a union, bring that up, because that's something I think that people would want to remedy.
Well, back to the whole Walmart thing, why doesn't Walmart want the union in there?
So just like the reasons that we talked about, unions try to raise up the standard of living for workers. And for some reason, companies like Walmart don't want that to happen. And there's many reasons behind all of that, right? They want to be able to keep prices really low, and they want to be able to exploit workers so then they can make a bigger profit. And that's just, I guess, the nature of a lot of businesses, right? They want to make sure they're making a lot of money. And if they're giving their money, their profits to the workers, then they're not making as much for themselves. So I think that's kind of where the bottom line is, right? That they would make less money. However, on the flip side of that, we talked about unions doing a lot of research. It's not really proven that exploiting your workers and paying them dirt wages would mean that you're making more money, right? There's lots of successful companies that pay decent wages, and they're still making a huge profit, right, for treating their workers fairly.
Yeah, so I have a question about, like, who can really unionize? Like, obviously, like, big companies and franchises that, like, span the entire country more than not have the option to unionize, but, like, small, like, family-owned pizza places, you know, that are just, like, one location, can they unionize at all, or is it worth it, or...
Any place can unionize, and any place. So, huge corporations that span the world, not even just Canada, but the world, can be part of a local. My local that I belong to, I work at the Federation of Labor. The staff there, we're unionized. There's only 7 of us in our office, and we have our own local. For a while, I was working with the Canadian Union of Public Employees as a temporary staff rep, and I represented locals that had one person working there. They're just one single person, and they have their own collective agreement, and we bargain just the same as if it was, you know, a workplace of 1,000 people.
I have a question that has nothing to do with unions or Walmart.
That was the best part.
I know we all love Walmart and Walmart people, but... I was just kind of curious, do you know what kind of laws and other things that you have in place for things against child labor?
Against child labor? Well, in Saskatchewan, there's laws that have a minimum age requirement to go to work. So you have to, like I said before, you have to be 16 years old to be able to work. And if you're 14 or 15 years old, you have to meet certain criteria in order to work. And I guess that would be sort of around child labor, right, to make sure that people under that age are not working.
All right, so another question for you then. It's not really to do with anything about the union or anything, but say you have a complaint against something, like say one of your employees is doing something that you particularly don't like and your manager's not doing anything. What's the steps that you take in order for that to be resolved?
It kind of depends on what the issue is. If it's just maybe you don't get along with that person, there isn't a whole lot you can do, right? You can go to your employer and make sure that they're aware of it. If it is a more serious issue in terms of like bullying or harassment at work or things that definitely are unsafe at the workplace, you can go to your employer. They actually have a duty to try to stop that from happening. It's the employer's responsibility to make sure it's a safe workplace. If they don't follow through with that, then that's when you would go to the Ministry of Workplace Safety and Labor Relations and try to get them to help you. This is something that would benefit if you were in a unionized workplace. The union definitely would help try to resolve conflict, and that's something that is very common, right, is kind of working with coworkers that have disputes and trying to resolve through those so then you can have a healthier, happier workplace.
And kind of going off on another branch here, whose responsibility is it to pay for personal protection equipment? Because I know a lot of even people in, like, our class have jobs where they require things like that, so...
So personal protective equipment is the equipment that you would need on a workplace, that's safety equipment, basically. It's different, and I actually had to look into this. I kind of wasn't exactly sure, and it is actually a little bit unclear, and it varies province to province. It says that it's the employer's responsibility to provide it, but it doesn't always say that it's a responsibility to pay for it, right? In Saskatchewan, it's the employer's responsibility to pay for protective headgear, eye and face protectors, and head, hand and arm protection. But other than that, you're kind of on your own as a worker. So that would be like your safety shoes or your kind of your everyday clothing that you would need to wear. So some of it will be covered by the employer, and then some of it is the responsibility of the employee.
And so is that kind of the same for just like a general uniform that your employer would require you to wear?
That's a good question. That happens a lot for young workers, especially not being sure. So it is required by law for the employer to provide a uniform if it's a specific uniform that you need to wear. They're actually supposed to pay for the uniform and also the laundering of the uniform. So if you need to wear a shirt that has a logo on it or a certain hat or whatever, if your uniform is just white shirt and black pants, they don't have to cover that. But if it's a specific uniform that they have to provide, then they're required to do that. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes they advertise for different jobs and they throw in there, oh, we provide a free uniform as it's a perk for you. It's kind of funny because they actually, by law, they have to provide you with the uniform.
So while we're talking about employers covering things, what are the instances where someone would take a type of leave, whether it's kind of like mat leave, sick leave, disability, or something even like jury duty?
Right, so you've listed lots of leaves already, and some of them would be covered by employers, some of them would not be, some of them, just like maternity leave we talked about, is covered by EI, employment insurance. So there's numerous types of leaves that you can have. Most of them would be unpaid leaves, unless you had a union contract that would specify for that, but you're right, so it could be maternity leave, sick leaves, or if you're injured, you could, if you're injured, especially if you're injured at work, that you could be off of leave, jury duty, bereavement leave. You can even have like a military leave or a public office leave. So if you were going to run for public office, you can ask for a leave from your work. So then you can do that and then come back. It could be education leaves. And then also you get different holidays off. So there's lots of different types of leaves. And depending on where you work and what type of leave, some of it might be employer covered. Some of it might be covered by EI. Most of them would be unpaid leaves.
So your employer wouldn't pay if you got called, say, tomorrow saying, yeah, you got to come in and do this guy's trial. You won't get paid by your employer. It's up to you to pay for it, get paid for it.
There might be legislation covering that. I think that they may have to cover some of it, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Dealing with union contracts, there's always language around that, and so that your employer would cover up to a certain point if you were called for, like, to stand witness on a trial. I'm not exactly sure if it's non-union. There would be legislation around that.
Well, thanks, Stacey, for all the information.
You're welcome.
Everyone else seems to have gone mute.
We just all want to thank you. We had nice time talking, interrogating you for the last hour or so. We do have one last song.
Yes, we do.
Our last song here is Working for the Weekend by Loverboy. It's a great song that sums up what we've been talking about for the last hour or so.
Okay, well, if you're ready for it, I think I have my computer ready here, too. So, there we go.
Go.
That was Lover Boy, Working for the Weekend. Why'd you guys pick that song?
It just basically summed up all what we've been talking about for the last two or so weeks. We went from talking about the reservation, schools, down to law, now into labor. Well, might as well throw something everybody will know out there.
So yeah. What have you basically been covering since the beginning of the course?
We've covered a lot of topics. The first major one I'd say we started with was residential schools and all that stuff that happened with, like, the colonization of Canada. And then we worked... actually, a lot of the Cochrane students went on a work study, and then the rest of us who remained, we talked a lot about feminism for a couple weeks, which was... We actually, came by a couple weeks ago, I think, and did a show about that. And then, yeah, now we're focusing a lot on, like, laws and...
We also, almost every day, cover a quite important current event. Sometimes, most of the time, it's local. Sometimes, Mr. Bassey does his favorite, like, all the way in the UK newspaper thing, which is sometimes interesting. We love when they all sit in front of class and talk, but we do look into a lot of important events going around, like, the city. Like, we looked a lot into the water voting thing that went on.
Water treatment plant?
Yeah, whether to privatize the water place or not. So we looked a lot into that. We've also visited the legislative building and had quite a few guest speakers, which is usually sometimes the most highlight of thing of the day. Except for sarcasm.
Hey, it gets us out of here in Bassey app for the whole hour.
Yeah, no, it's just the whole course is just a real nice twist on like a typical social studies or law course that you'd take at a regular high school. You know, we get to go on a lot of field trips and do a lot of kind of hands-on experiences, more so than you'd probably get to do in a regular course.
I'm just curious, how often would you actually talk about current events? Is that something you do on a daily basis
or once a week?
It's like every day.
Yeah. Unless we just like completely like mute Gardner or Bassey out.
Oh, that wouldn't be good. But do you discuss our famous mayor in Toronto at all? Does that ever come up?
We talked about him for a good couple weeks.
Are you getting tired of that now? I think we're all getting tired of that.
Our teachers were tired of it way before we were, that's for sure.
Right. Well, it's kind of unbelievable. Yeah, that's one thing we don't miss here in Regina. We've got a fairly reasonable city council, I'm proud to say. I'm happy to be living in Regina. I think our municipal government is... you know, it's probably right up there with the best ones in Canada. So what are you looking forward to in the new year? Do you have sort of a roadmap where you're going in the new year? Or are you going to be surprised?
I think we're gonna be surprised.
We're not going to know what's going to happen to us until next decade. You guys are doing this time.
Well, I'm sure if you have a good idea, if you came up with something, You would probably be able to do it.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah, safe to say whatever happens will be, you know, at least somewhat enjoyable for the majority of us taking the course.
Only somewhat.
Well, there's lots of stuff happening in the world today that, you know, bears some examination. For example, a good example here is the death of Mandela. So did you spend some time on that, did you? Or
We started talking about the one guy that was... trying to interpret for the deaf, and what his excuse was.
Yeah, that's kind of lame.
That
isn't
was
it?
A big topic for us.
Yeah, kind of a minor detail in the grand scheme of things, really, when it comes right down to it. But I mean, like in terms of who Mandela really was, where he came from, what he did, what his life was like.
Yes, we did talk about Nelson Mandela. We had we played Jeopardy, a class version of Jeopardy, every Friday afternoon. Which most kids look forward to. We get rather frighteningly competitive about it. Because when we do our radio shows, we're fighting over donuts, not candy bars, so things get a little bit more intensified. But there's a movie that just came out before Nelson Mandela died. I can't remember the name of the movie, but our teachers were hoping that if it came out before our course ended, that they would take us to see that in the cinema. It looks like it's going to be a really good movie.
Yeah, I think well worth everybody having a look at. Anyway, guess what? We've reached the end of our time. And I'd like to thank you all for coming. It's always a fun time when we get the group from Campus Regina Public, and you get interesting guests, and we have interesting conversations with them, and this particular episode is no different. So thanks very much. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJATR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, founder of International Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber has been closed, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a reality for the world's people, will our work be done."